2022. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. Sorry that you're here at this meeting. We do have quorum. So we're going to go ahead and proceed. Do we have any public comments? None. So then we're going to proceed over to the consent agenda items. Are there any questions on the consent agenda items? Yeah. If there's no questions, then I'm going to go ahead and entertain a motion to approve the consent items, please.
I so move.
Second.
First, Ms. Langley, and second, Mr. Sampaio. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. From here, we're going to go ahead and go to item number one, items for individual consideration. Mr. Brzyczak.
Madam Chair, members of the board. Got the in your packet the board calendar for February, March, and April. And then Mike's going to do the financial report. We have also an engineering and legal fee expenditure report. And then Hernandez is going to give a brief AMI update on where we are with that. I'm going to start off with the financial report, Mike.
Stabilization of $4.3 million, and we also back out the utility services from the City of Brownsville of $1,192,387, and we arrive at total operating revenues of $53,436,205. Operating expenses consist of purchase power and fuel, $17,613,949. Personnel services, $10,101,100. We have materials and supplies of $1,287,831. Repairs and maintenance, $867,195. Contractual and other services of $7,010,943. And depreciation expense for the three months under December of $6,999,229. Bringing total operating expenses to $43,880,247. So subtracting this from the operating revenues gives us the operating income of $9,555,958. Next, we've got the non-operating revenues and expenses, or contribution to SRWA of $1,659,356. Net interest income of $54,379. Interest expense of $2,425,926. Other revenue of $862,505. And a gain in the sale of capital assets of $6,031. And the payments to the City of Brownsville net of their usage of $2,709,556. So we subtract out the total non-operating expenses of $5,871,923, and we arrive at the income before capital contributions of $3,684,035. And we add in capital contributions of $926,637, and we have an increase in net position for the quarter ended December of of $4,610,672. Adding this to the net position at the beginning of the year, we arrive at net position at end of the year of $415,916,944. Here on the next page, we've got the flow of funds report. The only thing I will report on here will be lines 23 to 27. We do see that PUB generated sufficient net revenues to cover the budgeted transfers for the fuel adjustment, CIP funding, and the commercial paper defeasance, and still generated a surplus to PUB of $4.1 million. That concludes my financial report. Does anybody have any questions?
Questions, Mike.
Okay. So the next thing I wanted to report on was the engineering and legal fees report, and that you will find in your packet. So starting out with the engineering fees, total expenses for the 3 months were $292,145, an average of about $97,000 per month. We still have a balance remaining of $2,281,000. So there's sufficient balance there. There's no concern here. It should cover us through the rest of the year, but we'll keep monitoring that. Moving on to the legal expense report, we see total expenses for the 3 months were $436,575. At an average pace of about $145,000 per month. We do have a remaining balance of $787,257. So if we continue at this pace, we would run out of funding around mid-June. So we'll continue to monitor this and then likely come back to the board with a budget amendment either in April or May. Okay, so just so I'll let you know, some of the bigger legal items that we see here are for general matters. You know, BISD matters that we had the attorneys look at, the board agenda, special board meetings. And then we have PUC and regulatory matters that they've been dealing with, like the weatherization and the securitization opt-out bills. And then what we're seeing also is an uptick on the city audit services, you know, for services to review items that we submit for the review on the Tenasca project.
And most everything on that has been submitted to the audit. The city auditor, external auditor, so that should drop off a lot of that work. So our intent is to try to stay within the budget. We do need an amendment. We'll come back several months ahead of time, but right now we're trying to stay within the budget.
Okay.
The rest of the year.
Okay.
Okay. So no questions. That's
any
all
questions?
I have. Thank you.
Okay. Next is the AMI update. Eddie Hernandez.
Hey, Chairman, members of the board. I was just going to give you a quick update on the AMI project. If you have any questions, please feel free to stop me. Okay, where are we? The major milestones were requirements. In other words, getting the requirements for the system. That's been done. The next step was to do the draft RFP and have that reviewed. That was completed. And then where we currently are is we published the RFP, the request for proposals. So that's been that was put out the door on at the end of the month in January. So it's been put out to the street for people to respond to. So now we're waiting on responses to come back. And then after once the responses do come back, I believe the drop dead date is March 16th. Then we will do the evaluation. Then we'll have a shortlist, a meeting to shortlist the. Hopefully, we'll have a lot of respondents. That's what they're hoping for. And then we'll shortlist them, and then we'll take the shortlist to the committee or the board, however you all choose. and then we'll do vendor selection. And that's when the rubber meets the road. Schedule, we finished task one, task two, and we're right now we're sitting in the middle of task three. As you can see, February 2022. So the next task, as I just mentioned, would be the response and evaluation, which would happen in March and April. So things will be moving along quickly. As I said, the RFP was published on January the 31st, and the responses are due on the 16th. And we hope to have everything wrapped up and ready to present to the board by the by April, May at the latest. So what are we asking for in the AMI proposal? The main pieces that are going to come in are the meter data management system. That's the think of it as a giant data warehouse. That's where all the reads come in, because remember, now you're taking reads every 15 minutes on electric, not once a month. It's every 15 minutes. And on water, it's once an hour. So all that data's got to come and sit somewhere. So you have a system that handles that. It brings it in, it stores it, and then it parses out the pieces of information to the other systems. And you see all these boxes are all the different systems that touch the AMI system. The customer information system, the bill payment system, the customer portal that we talked about, that we mentioned last month, the GIS, the OMS, all of these systems are going to become interrelated. The AMI will sit in the middle of that. And the MDS is kind of like the traffic control manager. Obviously, when systems hit the MDMS, they don't want that huge download of data. I just want this one thing. The billing system just wants those two reads, beginning and end. Let me subtract one from the other, and I can create a bill. So that's what the MDMS is like, the traffic control. Other people will want other pieces of information, like the customer portal. The customer may want to see, well, why is my bill so high? Well, now we'll be able to go in and show them, well, let's see what happened the last couple of weeks. We can go in, we can take a look at 15-minute intervals and see, okay, what happens at 3 o'clock every day? The kids come home, you know, well, guess what's happening? You know, your AC is getting cranked up and they're plugging every device known to man into the system, but you'll be able to actually see when things happen. So again, that's kind of the way the system works. The other piece that you see there is the AMI head-in system, and that's really kind of like the communication system out in the field. That's the system that brings all the communications in from the meters. The meters are trying to communicate back to the main office, and the AMI head-in system, that's the piece that actually does all of that. Most of the other systems we have in place, we'd mentioned the customer portal. We'll be looking at that. We're doing that in conjunction because we were going to replace that anyway. We'll be bringing that I'm bringing that under the auspices of this kind of. We have a separate budget for the actual program. However, we're going to have the same consultants do the work. That way, they're responsible for the integration of everything. We want one group responsible for that and to make sure that everything works together. And you'll be seeing that graphic many, many more times. So where are we on the budget? To date, we've spent $42,000 of the procurement budget. So we have about $35,000 left. So we're in good shape there. Mr. Brugiak did ask me to put something together regarding risks. What are some of the risks that our consultants see out there right now? As we're all hearing about supply chain issues and product delays and just being able to get a hold of product. eSource, who is our consultant, and they have many other projects out in the field, they are seeing some issues with other AMI companies or other vendors for AMI system, metering systems. We're hoping that a lot of that we'll get over that hump in the next 6 months or now, because remember, we're not installing. It's going to take us at least 6 to 9 months just to cobble the thing together and then actually start putting meters into the ground. So what we're hoping is we can get past some of these issues by then. A lot of that evaluation will happen during the evaluation of the product, because it's not just what's your price, it's how good is your product, is your product available, when can you install your product, you know, those kinds of things. Those are all questions that will have to be answered at that point in time. So they're seeing product lead range times from 6 to 12 weeks up to 52 weeks, depending on what you choose. So we're going to have to be very careful when we go through that process. And that's what we'll As they're mentioning there, that's what we'll be considering and going through when we do the vendor shortlisting. And obviously, as far as pricing is concerned, they are seeing an uptick in pricing. Like every day we hear about inflation, just in general products. I just filled up with gas today, and it's not what it was a couple of months ago. So they're seeing the same thing. Hopefully, we can get through some of that, but you know, we'll evaluate that when the RFPs come in. The next steps will to host a pre-proposal meeting with the interested vendors, respond to their questions. Usually the vendors will, you know, each of the vendors will have questions that they submit, and then we respond to all of those questions in one shot. So they all have the same information. Then the team will prepare a response. We'll do the evaluation and scoring to shortlist it. And then after that, we'll begin planning and preparations for vendor contract negotiations. And obviously, we will come to the board, the committee and the board to get approval of that before we do anything. And that's it.
Don't forget the meters. How long will it take for you to install or to make these changes once we get the meters?
It depends on the what we ask for, how we finalize it. Right now, the way we're looking at water meters is we're hoping to continue just using the same water meters and just replace the register. Basically, it has a node that communicates with the AMI system. I think the whole process, the whole timeline will be probably about 2.5 to 3 years to get the whole thing done. So it's going to take a while. I mean, we've got 100,000 meters out there, roughly 60,000 water, 55,000 electric in that neighborhood. Now, the electric meters will be a complete replacement of regardless of which vendor we choose. So that takes a while. That's just the physical getting the delivery of the meters and putting them in place. But there's a lot of upfront work that has to happen with the systems that we were talking about earlier, and that takes a while.
Okay.
Chair, I'd like to make a comment or ask Eddie something. Eddie, is this something that is happening in the industry and throughout the state, or
yes,
updating to this magnitude?
Yes, sir. It's the majority of utilities in Texas have already gone through this process and done this. All your IOUs have done it. They did it by mandate. I believe they were mandated to do it and implement it by 2012. So we're, you know, the MOUs have been kind of falling in line one after the other since then. So it is common in the industry right now.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions?
No questions. Thank you very much for your presentation.
Okay, let's see.
That's all I have in my report.
On your report? Okay. So we're going to go ahead and go with item number 2, which is a presentation of the installation of comfort stations at the John Glor Park, and that has your name, Sandra. Or you want?
Go ahead.
Okay. So the Boy Scouts of America Eagle Scout candidate, Mr. Sergio N. Gonzalez, will present on the installation of the 5 comfort stations for families and pets at the John Glor Park located at PUB Drive. Each of the 5 comfort stations consists of a bench with a fishing rod holder and a pet water bowl. The benches provide for a resting area for families to enjoy the park. A PVC pipe is attached to each bench to accommodate families that use the Resaca for recreational fishing. A water bowl made of PVC plastic is attached to each bench to allow a place for families to provide water to their pets. And Mr. Gonzalez, will you go ahead and tell us about that?
Thank you. So this was part of my Eagle Scout project. It was a project that is a requirement and in the process of getting the Eagle Scout badge. So it was supposed to be a service project that benefits the community with the assistance of the other boys in my troop. So it was at John Glor Park, which is right down the street, and we added 5 benches. And the mold for the benches is of a plastic resin, and we added treated lumber for the backrest and the sitting part of the bench. Each side of the bench has something attached to it. So one side has plastic fishing rod holders, and the other side has stainless steel dog bowls, which are able to come out to dump water and place back in. And they're all secured. The benches are secured with concrete, and the bowls are the bowls are bolted in, and so are the fishing rod holders. In addition to that, there's a fork structure, and that's meant to hold fishing rod poles closer to the water, and that's also cemented in. Each bench is roughly 12 to 13 feet from the water line, and the additional fishing rod holders are about 8 feet from the water line or the retaining wall. So it took about 3 days. Each day had about seven to eight scouts show up. And throughout the PowerPoint, there's going to be pictures of the different days in which all the boys were helping. And this basically describes how the stations were made, how the scouts were provided with tools and all the necessary equipment to work in small groups to get the benches done. And they all worked with concrete, and we had to dig some holes and clean up trash around the area just to make the place a little better. So first, this was a preliminary scouting. So we went around, we measured the distance from the water, cleaned up any trash that wasn't ours beforehand, and we marked where the benches were going to be just with distance. So then here is when we actually started to construct. This was our first bench. We dug in the four holes. Each boy dug a hole. There was about four. I'm putting in groups of four, so they each had a task for the bench. And this was the first bench digging. And then comes next is the installation. So we're already about 4 hours in. We have all the holes done. So now it's time to start mixing the concrete. And we're going to drop the bench right over the holes. And they're going to be resting on some wooden rests that lay across the holes. So here is another picture of that going on. And we're about to start laying over those wooden planks to rest the bench upon. So there was a learning curve. I was dealing with a lot of younger scouts. So there was a lot of learning that had to be done. And I guess my part of the learning was trying to find which way worked best. So I think that putting kids that worked well together just in groups of their own kind of keep them on track. Instead of worrying about digging holes, it was more about the time just went by while they were with each other. So a lot of this time spent was spent teaching scouts how to use concrete. So many scouts said that this was their first time witnessing how concrete was poured and prepared. So this is the fishing rod holder we placed about 8 feet from the bench. The addition was meant for the idea to keep some distance between strangers that were either sitting on the bench or just fishing, so that lines wouldn't cross with pedestrians. It was supposed to create some safe space. And so some park visitors can be separated while others can be seated on the bench without interruption. So this is the final product. This is what one completed bench looks like, taken at the end of the day from our third day of working. It was completely finished and cemented into the ground. And then there's another one where we can see the dog bowls a little better, and there's the detached fishing rod holders too. If there's any questions about the project?
Any questions? Mr. Gonzalez, all the supplies, everything, was that donated to you, or you all, how did you all get all the materials involved for this project?
So the materials was part of the project workbook that I'm given, and I have to fill that out. So a lot of it was donations. We got donations from a law office, a construction company, and a trucking company.
I've known Mr. Gonzalez and his father for a long, long time. I was just telling him, I haven't seen him in years, but he was a little tot when I first met him. Him and his brother were very, very young. His dad, Mr. Gonzalez, has been very involved with scouting. You've been a scout for many, many years now. I'm really very proud of you and your leadership, the role that you took as being so young and working with these young children to teach them and work with them. That's really a big responsibility on your part. So this is great. I haven't been to it yet. I will go out there and look at it, but I think I do run around here sometimes, and the benches were not there. We did see that a lot of people hang out there. They take their dogs out for walks. People are walking. They sit by the Resaca, and, you know, people really enjoy it. But I think you putting the benches there is going to be very, very good. And I know you're going to become something big. You're going to be doing very well. I thank you so much for everything that you're doing.
Well, thank you guys for
congratulations. That was a great project. Thank you very much. Good luck in the future.
Thank you.
I'd just like to make one comment. I'd like to commend him on his presentation. He sounds very confident for a young person. Mm-hmm. And obviously the project is a really neat project for our community. So thank you, and I wish you well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Great job.
Good job.
If you're ready, we're going to go ahead into number three, the presentation by Wilden Financial Services on the water and wastewater rate study.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. So back in December, the BPUB board approved the presentation of scenarios 3 and 4, creating a separate Resaca fee to the City Commission for their consideration and approval. Since then, PUB staff did request an additional analysis of levelizing the annual rate increases. The results of this new levelized scenarios were presented to the Finance Committee on February the 2nd, 2022. So here with us tonight, we have Dan Jackson, Vice President with Wilden Financial Services, who will be presenting his analysis. Dan, you may proceed.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the chance to talk with you all tonight. I'm having a few camera issues, so if you don't mind, I'd like to keep my camera off at least for the time being. As the board is aware, we have made...
Sorry to interrupt you, but we're having a hard time hearing you. Can you speak up a little?
Yes, yeah. I'm trying to. I'm having some connection difficulties. I do hope that you're able to hear me a little bit better now. We have made a few different presentations to the board over the last several months looking at different rate alternatives in regards to a long-term comprehensive financial plan for the PUB. We've looked at several different scenarios and several different alternatives. We've gotten a lot of very good feedback from the board as well as the staff itself. And we have narrowed it down to 4 different scenarios for long-term rate plans for the board. I would like to, if I could get permission to share my content, I would like to share the summary page of our presentation, and I'd like to go over each of the 4 different scenarios for you all to consider. If I can share my screen here. Do you see my screen right now? You can see this is the summary page that presents the 4 different scenarios that we have gone over with the board in the past. One of the questions that I'm sure everybody asks is, why is a long-term rate plan necessary? Well, there are 3 primary reasons why we recommend that the PUB board consider a long-term rate plan. The first is that right now, your water and wastewater revenues are recovering a little bit less than their costs. So you need to adjust your rates to ensure that your revenues cover their costs. The second reason is that operating expenses are expected to continue in the future. Cost of everything goes up by 3 to 4% a year. So it's reasonable to assume that costs are going to continue to increase. So we would recommend that you put a long-term rate plan into place that not only recovers your costs today, but will also recover your costs tomorrow. And the third reason is that the PUB is looking at spending as much as $220 million in long-term capital repairs and improvements to the water and sewer system. This is not an unusual amount of money given the size of the PUB's water and wastewater system. However, a rate plan is necessary to ensure that you have the funds available to make those adjustments. So with that in mind, there are a couple of different options that you can consider with regards to your long-term rates. The first issue is, do you want to try to recover your costs as quickly as possible, or would you like to phase in the rates over a longer period of time? The second question is, regarding your RESACA. Do you want to recover your RESACA costs as part of your general water and wastewater rates, or would you like to recover your RESACA costs as a separate monthly fee? So with that in mind, let's take a look at the different alternatives on this page. Scenario one is a rate plan that assumes that you want to eliminate the shortfall of revenues over your from your water and sewer costs as quickly as possible. That would mean that we would recommend that you have larger increases in the first couple of years. As you can see, you would do a 9% water rate adjustment in the first year, a 9% adjustment in the second year, a 7% adjustment in the third year, and then 5% adjustments in years 4 and 5. Similar rate adjustments would be necessary on the wastewater side. A second scenario says, let's just smooth out the increases. Let's just do an increase of the same percent each year. If you did that, the increase would be 7.1% each year for the next 5 years. Now, you haven't had a rate adjustment in several years in the water and wastewater utility. So as I said earlier, this would help make up for the current deficit and would ensure that you would continue to recover your future operating and capital costs. Now, the third scenario assumes that you decide to recover your RESACA costs from a separate fee as opposed to the water and wastewater rate. If you were to recover RESACA costs from a separate fee, we would recommend that you implement a monthly fee of $2.50 for every customer, $2.50 a month, and that will recover your basic RESACA costs. If you did that, your water rate adjustments, instead of being 7.1% a year, would only be 6.3% a year. The final scenario, scenario four, assumes that you recover your RESACA costs separately, but you include your CORE and your USAKI costs in your RESACA cost of service. That means that your RESACA cost of service would be substantially higher. So instead of a $2.50 a month charge for RESACA costs, your charge would start at $4.50 and eventually make its way up to $12.50. So from the bottom of that chart, you can see the impact on monthly charges at 10,000 gallons of water and sewer service under each of the four scenarios. Right now, a customer pays $69.09 for 10,000 gallons of water and sewer service. Under scenario one, that rate would eventually go to $97.28 by 2026. Under scenario two, it would also go to about $97.36, or the same amount, but as you can see, the adjustments would be a lot less in the earlier years. In year one, instead of going from $69 to $75, it would only go from $69 to $74. But eventually, you would end up in the same place. You would just get there a little bit more slowly. Under scenario three, your water and wastewater charges would go from $69 to $95, but you would have a $2.50 RESACA fee, and that means that your rate would eventually go to $98 by 2026. Under scenario four, it would start at $69 and would go to $108 by 2026. That's just simply because you would be recovering all those core costs in addition to your RESACA costs. So as you can see, the ultimate rate decision is one that is a policy decision as much as it is a financial decision. How do you want to recover those costs? How quickly do you want to recover those costs? And do you want your RESACA fees to be recovered through your water rate, or do you want it to be recovered separately through a monthly charge? You look at those alternatives, all of those alternatives will get you the revenue you need to run your system. It's just a matter of which one you think is the most appropriate for the PUB. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you have at this time.
Questions?
So the finance committee had recommended that the options be reviewed with the city staff and possibly discussed at a joint meeting with between BPUB board and the city commission in order to gain a consensus and the best option. So it's really up to the board what our next steps are going to be.
Decision from us tonight?
Yes.
As to would it be if we agree with the finance committee to move forward on?
Yeah, so that we can start discussing this with the city staff and then possibly set up a joint meeting, yeah, board meeting with
the board already approved scenarios 3 and 4 to take to the commission, which Mike and I did in December. Okay. So they're aware we're coming.
Okay.
It's just, I think the one change to this that you hadn't seen was the levelized cost. And if you want to go with the levelized cost, recommend that or let the commission decide. But it's the only difference tonight is the levelized cost. Nothing else changed from what you made the decision to go with scenarios 3 and 4. So all we're saying is we want to be okay to go ahead and I'll start with meeting with the city manager and their finance department, show them the impacts, and then get it on the city commission agenda, probably March, April.
Okay.
Our recommendation from the finance committee was to take both options to the city staff and discuss it with them so that they could provide input as to what they felt the commission would be most comfortable.
Does this require a motion from us to agree to this or just?
If we need a motion, it's presentation. I think we're just, unless you see something that's, you don't want to do that, but we're still on the same track we were last month.
So the consensus would be for you to move forward with the city commission and get together or city staff and get together with them and discuss right. It so we can move forward on this issue.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll do that. Thank you.
Okay.
Say the only thing tonight was the levelized cost that we wanted to.
Yep.
Okay.
Is an option. That's all.
Right.
That's the only change, or we probably wouldn't have been back. So,
and John, what's the timeline for a final decision here?
Mayor, we'd like to try to get it. I'll get with Noel tomorrow and try to get your schedule for March, but probably in the March timeframe.
Okay, perfect. That's what I was going to ask, if we can just go ahead and move it along, because I know we've been on this item for a long time.
Yeah, it'll be March.
Thanks.
Okay.
With that, we're going to go ahead and move to number 5, which is a presentation, discussion, and possible action on the following resolution. A resolution approving the study by 1898 and Company, an independent consulting and engineering firm of Brownsville Public Utilities.
Sorry, Madam Chair.
On 4.
Yeah, we're on item 4.
We jump one.
Are we on number 4?
Yes.
Yeah, number 4.
Oh, I'm sorry. Number 4 is going to be the consideration and approval of the annual comprehensive financial report for the period ending September 30th, 2021.
Yes. So, Madam Chair, members of the board, the results of the audit were presented to the Finance Committee February 2nd. The auditors had no material weakness, did not identify any material weaknesses, and no audit findings or concerns. With us tonight is Sarah Slaughter, Senior Manager with Becutini, and she'll be making the presentation. Slaughter, I'm sorry. Sarah, you may proceed.
Good evening. My name is Sarah Slaughter. I'm going to go ahead and share my presentation here.
Trouble hearing this.
Cranked them up. We'll
crank Can it up. You hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yes?
There we go. It's better.
Okay. Well, good evening, everyone. And I appreciate you allowing me to come here and present the fiscal year 21 audit results. As Mike has mentioned, we had previously communicated to the audit committee a more detailed presentation on the audit results. But today I'm going to present to you a high level presentation. I'm going to go over our audit overview of what we performed during the audit, briefly go over the required communications to the audit committee and the board, our internal control communication, and then address, I guess, any questions that the board may have at that time. So as part of our audit, we audit the annual comprehensive financial report in accordance with generally accepted auditing standards and also with government auditing standards. As part of that audit, we do provide you an audit results letter that goes into more detail in the auditor's communication with those charged of government. Our audit was conducted remotely this year. This was the second year that we did conduct the audit remotely. It was done 2 weeks at final field work in the beginning of November and a week of preliminary work in July. We were able to conduct the audit remotely very smoothly. Management was very cooperative, and we were able to maintain our audit timeline as previously communicated in our planning letter to you. Some of the areas that we focused on as part of our audit is we will review your cash and investments. We look at internal controls and processes over your disbursements, your payroll process, your utility billing, and then the financial reporting process. We also look at your utility revenue and billing, your unbilled revenue accruals, your net pension obligation, and your total OPEB obligation. Being a utility, very capital intensive, so we look at all your assets under construction and the plant placed into service during the year. We look at all your long-term obligations, your bond issuances, and repayments. We review your self-insurance incurred but not reported, as well as claims that have done during the year. We look at any of your regulatory items. That would be your rate stabilization fund, as well as your fuel over and under. And then at the end of that all, we look at your financial statements, your reporting, the notes, and look at the analytical review from prior year. As I mentioned earlier, audits performed in generally accepted auditing standards and government auditing standards. Our audit objective is to provide reasonable assurance that financial statements are free from material misstatement. And at the conclusion of our audit, we were able to provide an unmodified opinion, which is a clean opinion, which is the highest level of assurance as an audit firm that we can provide to PPUB. And we also noted there were no material weaknesses discovered in our audit. So as I mentioned earlier, we provide an audit results letter that really goes into detail of these required communications. And in this letter, we describe our audit responsibility, which is to audit the statements to ensure they're free of material misstatement, as I stated earlier. We also have to ensure and attest to our independence. We are not aware of anything that would impair independence with BPUB. We also have to let you know that our audit does not relieve the board or management of their responsibility to oversee BPUB. We also have to report to you if there's any significant transactions this year, and which there were none this year. As part of our audit, we also look at BPUB's accounting policies that are disclosed in note one of your financial statements. We look at these policies to ensure not only do they follow GAAP, generally accepted accounting principles, but we also make sure that BPUB is following these policies. In addition to the accounting policies, we also look at significant estimates in the financial statements. The reason we look at these significant estimates and disclose to you what they are is because if there was anything that was going to be going wrong with what's in your financial statements, it would be around these estimates because there are assumptions and forecasts with that obviously when you actually get there may not happen exactly as they occur. I am pleased to report that we are in agreement with your accounting policies and your disclosures, and they're clear and consistent to prior year. And there are no material adjustments as part of our statements this year, and no other audit findings or concerns. And as part of our audit, we do look at internal control and review key processes. We do not provide an opinion on the operating effectiveness of controls, but if anything were to become to our attention, we do have to provide those and disclose that to the board. And I'm pleased to report there were no material weaknesses or significant deficiencies that we have to report to the board this year. And this is not a feat to glance over, because it is very, I guess, significant that management does look at internal controls and ensures that all key controls are in there and then there's no weaknesses. I want to thank you and management for allowing us to perform the audit this year. And I guess I would like to open it up with any questions that you may have.
Questions?
No questions.
Great. Well, here is my contact information as well as the partner's contact information. If anything pops up after this or for next year's audit, please feel free to reach out with any questions. And with that, I would like to thank you and have a good evening.
Thank you, Sarah. So the BPUB staff recommends approving the annual comprehensive financial report for the fiscal year ending September 30, 2021.
Like, when will this be available to the public on our website?
We will upload it tomorrow morning, and we will also be forwarding copies of this to a lot of our stakeholders, federal, state, local agencies, bond counsel, financial advisor, or rating agencies, just to name a few.
Questions? Requires a motion for approval?
So moved, yes, please.
First and second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Now we're in number five. All right.
Yes, thank you.
Number five, presentation, discussion, and possible action on the following resolution. A resolution approving the study by 1898 and Company, an independent consulting and engineering firm of Brownsville Public Utility Board's electric rates, fees, and charges, and requesting the City Commission to amend Chapter 102 of the Code of Ordinances entitled Utilities to approve and adopt the rates identified in the study. Mike?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. So our engineering consulting firm, 1898, completed their study on the financial impact of the rollback of the electric rates as required by the city charter. With us is Craig Brown with 1898 and Company that will be making this presentation. Craig, you may proceed.
Good evening, everyone. I'm not allowed to share my screen yet. I got unmuted, but the share content is blocked off for me at this moment. There we go. Just give me a second to pull this up. Okay, good evening, everyone. Again, my name is Craig Brown with 1898 & Co., which is the consulting division of Burns & McDonnell Engineering Company. And today we're going to talk about the rollback of base rate increases for the electric utility. So just wanted to start with some background on what exactly we're dealing with here and where it came from. So back in late 2012, early 2013, the board elected to enact a series of a five-year rate plan of base rate increases that was for a combination of a share of a generation development project and also just annual ongoing growth in O&M costs. As you can see in the table, it was done over 5 years, and the majority of it was tied directly to the bond issuance to pay for the generation facility, and it was targeted at recovering the annual debt service payment as expected then for the generation development project. And then in years 2, 3, 4, and 5, there was also a series of growth and O&M targeted ranging from 3 to 4% per year. So just wanted to show a little bit about what was expected to be recovered from the planned issuance. And what this table shows is, you know, of the amount that was the rate increases that were recovered on an annual basis, Brownsville staff did an internal review of how much money that's going to generate. And it came to about, it was a planned amount of about $15.1 million would be generated on an annual basis, all inclusive of once all the rates were enacted. And as you know, that generation plant was never developed due to the lack of additional partners. So that additional rate base rate revenue that has been generated annually has been placed in reserve, and over the last many years has been used to offset fuel and purchase power costs. So you have been charging for the past quite a few years a fuel and purchase power rate of about 2.9 cents when the actual cost you're incurring each year is much higher than that. So effectively, you've been keeping your customers whole. You've generated more than you've actually needed in base rates, but recovering less than you did in fuel, and those two have been offset for each other. Now, the Brownsville staff tracks each year what actually is recovered from this based on, you know, changes in usage, changes in customer class rates, things like that. And their annual analysis of actual base rates demonstrates that they've actually realized about an average of $13.8 million per year that they have been recovering. So as we think of, you know, what's an appropriate amount that you should target to reduce base rates, you know, I think the 13.8 would be a minimum, and then it could go up from there. You know, the target was 15, and I think, you know, it can be even more than that, depending on how you want to look at this base rate reduction. So the goal of this, you know, this rate adjustment is to reverse the base rate increases that were specifically related to the bond issuance. And that's the five series of 4 to 7% over the 5 years. And in working with staff, a clean design option to come up with a way to adjust rates is to revert the base rates back to what the rates were after the second increase. So if you go back to only leaving in the first 2 years rate increases and effectively taking off the last three specific to the generation project. So as part of this project, we developed a very detailed revenue calculation by class to be built up from the individual billing determinants and rates and, you know, times that to get to the revenue forecast, because we wanted to make sure we could specifically measure the revenue impact on an annual basis of any changes. And while I'm not showing, I mean, and we applied that against the city's existing five-year forecast that shows the projected revenues from, you know, affected costs from fuel and O&M and debt service. So we've built out this entirely. I'm not showing it all on the screen. I wanted to focus just on the main highlights. So by applying that reduction to take the rates back to the fiscal year 14 levels equals about an 18.3 decrease in base rate revenue. And that reduction in base rates equates to about, as you see in 2023, about $16.3 million. The 2022 value of $6.7 million is lower because if you enact this mid-year, obviously it's going to generate less of a reduction. But the annualized amount is about $16.5 million reduction in base rate revenue going forward. So in our evaluation process, to see if this is an appropriate reduction, if it's too much or too little, we focused on two things. First, we wanted to see is because you're no longer using reserves or putting money into reserves, basically the surplus that's left after all your bills are paid is what's used to fund the annual capital program. So is there enough CIP money left? And second, are you still meeting your debt service coverage targets on an annual basis and going into the forecast years? So with the CIP funding, with this plan of reducing the rates in fiscal year 14 levels, that's going to leave you about $7 to $9 million per year to fund your capital program. And that's probably going to be a declining amount because once you make this adjustment, your O&M costs are expected to go up over time. So while it produces about 9.4 million, you know, in 23, that amount's going to go down every year as far as what's available to fund your capital program. And then the second component of that is debt service coverage. So your debt service coverage requirement, according to your bond covenant, is 1.25, but you have an internal metric of 1.50. And as you can see in this debt service coverage projection, it levels out in around the 1.7 range. So you're still well above your target metric, and that shouldn't decline very fast, except as you increase debt usage going forward, that could put additional pressure on the debt service coverage ratio. So I wanted to show also a sample residential bill and what the impact would be currently and then after the adjustment. So we're looking at a current 2022 residential bill, and this uses the current FPEC or fuel charge of 4.055 cents per kilowatt hour. So using the current fuel charge and the current rates produces a monthly bill of $113.03, or an average of 11.3 cents per kilowatt hour. For a 1,000 kilowatt hour bill. And what we show for the proposed 2023 bill is it actually comes out about the same, because you'll notice on the last line where it says fuel charge, the projected fuel cost for 2023 is up to around 5.2 cents per kilowatt hour. So effectively, the base rate reduction will be offset by the higher fuel charge that's recovering full costs at that point. So, and this effectively is what you've been doing for the past few years. You've been over recovering base rates, under recovering fuel rates. What you've done now is effectively sync those up to where you're actually recovering the right costs from the right buckets. And as you can see overall, while you would like to see a bigger impact from a rate reduction when combined with the fuel charge, this effectively keeps the typical residential bill the same. So just an overall summary and just some comments about recommendations on actions you can take. You know, as your rate consultant, we do feel it's appropriate to undo the bond issuance base rate increases and reduce base rates. And we think it's important to charge the actual fuel and purchase power costs in the FPEC. So I think the timing of this is appropriate since you've started to increase your FPEC. I feel the board has discretion as to how much of a base rate decrease is appropriate. We've provided a presented plan that is certainly fair to customers. We think it exceeds, you know, a limit you could have put on yourselves. And I think that should be good, a good message to your customers that, you know, you're actually rolling back a little bit more on a dollar basis than you might otherwise have. But also I would put a word of caution and make sure that your future capital needs and ongoing cost escalation should be considered, because you wouldn't want to be put in a situation where you roll back base rates now and due to inflation or unexpected expenses, you have to turn around and consider a rate increase, say, 2 or 3 years from now. You know, the five-year forecast as it stands now says you'll be perfectly fine for the next 5 years and won't need a rate increase. But as you can see in inflation, and especially construction costs and electric equipment that I've seen lately, costs are definitely increasing. So I just want you to consider potentially being conservative with this. You have the leeway to maybe consider phasing this in over 2 years, just to make sure any large jumps in costs don't change or unexpected expenses occur, such as another cold snap. So with that, I think that completes my presentation. I think the takeaway that the staff is looking for is to take some direction on how would you like to see these reductions placed. And if it's accepted with the 2014 rollback, we already have those rates obviously identified. But at this point, I'll open it up to questions.
Yeah, I've got some questions. I don't know if this question is for Craig or if it's for administration. Craig, can you hear me?
I can hear you fine, yes.
As I'm reading the summary on the agenda item, December 2012, the board requested the City Commission approve a five-year rate plan for the electric, water, and wastewater utilities. The rate plan was predicated upon the need to fund ongoing growth-related operational maintenance costs, as well as a generation development project. What project are we talking about?
Absent five. Pardon? Does someone from staff want to take that, or shall I?
This is Tenasca?
Yes.
This is Tenasca, yes.
So there was a project and then the bond financing of that project. Due to project termination, when was the project terminated? Do you have a date on it?
2 years ago, maybe, there was the final determination.
Oh, Craig. So this goes back to 2012, 2013. It became effective, and now we're in 2000.
And there never was a bond issued for this project. So it was in the development stage for many years and got delayed and delayed and delayed until the utility was finally able to get out from under the MOU, I believe, 2 years ago.
So there wasn't any bond issues?
Correct. It was just the planned amount that was going to be spent on the debt service payment, and then they were able to collect those annual revenues and then use them to offset fuel costs over the last few years.
Yeah. I'm really concerned as the way this is being presented, and what exactly are we doing? We're going back to the rates of 2012, 2013?
The proposal on the table is to go back to the rates after the second rate increase. So basically the rates that were effective October 1st, 2013. So I think the staff's theory on that is because the O&M and growth ones were 7% and 3, 3, 4, and 4 adds up to 14%, that by only accepting the first 2 years, which was cumulative 14%, that would approximate the rate reduction for just the bond issuance side.
Okay. Still not quite understanding. Now we want to go into a decrease of the base electric rates to return to the electric rates previously made effective October 1st, 2013. Can you give it to me in plain English? How that's going to affect ratepayers?
Sure. So it's not going to affect the ratepayers because basically you've been collecting, say, first of all, when we say base rates, that's basically everything but the fuel and purchase power recovered in the FPEC. So that's basically everything that's in the customer charge, demand charges, and energy charge. Anything that's not FPEC is what we consider base rates. Since this has been enacted, so since, you know, after the 5 year period in 2017, every year you've been over collecting by about 15 million or 13.7 million on average is what you've been collecting more than you needed in base rates. And rather than just let that build up in reserves, you've used that to apply to reducing what your fuel costs are charged to your customers. So effectively, if you were supposed to collect 50 million in fuel from your customers, you were applying that 15 million and only collecting 35 million. So basically, while you were collecting too much in base rates, it was used to offset what customers were paying. Now that you're truing up your fuel and purchase power cost to what it actually costs, so you're raising your FPEC, and it's gone from 2.9 cents to over 4 cents already. So now you're not going to have that surplus is going to build up again because you're not giving it back by reducing the rate. So effectively, now that you've trued up your fuel cost, it's an appropriate time to roll back that excess revenue you're getting from the base rate increase.
You know, I'd like to know if we collected the funds from the customers, we have the funds, it was going to go towards the project didn't materialize. Does the administration have the authority to use that money, as you're saying, to reduce that cost, the fuel cost?
The board did that.
The board did?
Yes. We brought that plan to the board when we were collecting that. As we saw the project not developing, to roll those costs back into the sector to lower the bill.
This must have happened a couple of years ago.
Yeah. You know what?
We've had the
16.
The yeah, since 2016.
2016.
The fuel rate at the 2.9 cents.
Okay.
So in essence, all that money that was generated, the 22% from the bond issuance rates, all that money was given back to the customer. None of it was used for O&M expenses.
Okay. Thank you. Oh, but I'm okay right now. Yeah, I think this is an important item, yeah. And I think it's critical for people to understand what happened. And there's a lot of information here. I'm sure John and staff have been, you know, working on this to undo it in a proper fashion. But no, I think there's some concerns.
In December, we didn't go, Mike and I, to the city commission and laid this out. And we told them we'd be back. So ultimately, the commission has to decide. We can't decide on this. We can recommend as a board, but the commission can elect to do it or not do it, keep it in place, or, you know, do some part of it if they want to, or do it over time in different years, not 1 year, but several years. So that part, until we get before the commission is with a joint meeting, we won't know.
Do we have any information? That's what I was going to reiterate, that this ultimately is something that's going to be decided by the commission.
Couldn't hear you, Mayor.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry about that. I just said, yeah, this is something that ultimately is going to be decided by the commission, but I think a recommendation from the board would be helpful. Really what we're trying to do, I guess, is just trying to keep the average bills the same, which is right around $113, because when we voted a couple months ago as a board here at PUB to charge the ratepayer our actual fuel charge, that made the average bill go up. So I think what we're trying to do now is correct it back to where the average monthly bill is right around the same, while at the same time lowering that Tenasca rate, or whatever you want to call it, which was about a 36% increase by about half, which gets us right in line with where we need to be, I think.
Like the mayor said, ultimately the decision is for the commission.
Right.
Is there any additional information that we need to put in front of the commission, or any opinions or feedback from other advisors?
Yeah, we have talked to our and our financial advisors and bond counsels on the line tonight if we want to hear from them, but they indicated, or at least our financial advisor, that there could be a downgrade of the utility, and because of that action, and that would be conveyed to the commission, that there's a possibility. We won't know that till it's rescinded, but and Noe's on the line if you want to, Noe, make any comments on that.
Sure, John. Noe Nahosa, for the record, was trying to host that company. In lieu of the most recent events, weather-wise, in Texas, and in how rating agencies have been seeing utilities all across the country, irrelevant of this of whether you take action on this item or not, the rating agencies seem to be very bearish on or very reluctant on municipally owned utility companies. So coupled with an action like this, it could give a downgrade to the utility. At the same time, we appreciate the study that has been done. We did share with staff that maybe a two-step process of reducing the rate will be probably be more manageable from the perspective of perception by the rating agencies versus a one reduction from one year to the next. So those were our observations.
Just suggest that we
will convey that.
Yeah, convey that to the commission. So they have, I don't think that changes our resolution right. or a recommendation, but we want to make sure that the commission has all the information and all those opinions so that they can make the best decision as a commission.
Right. We'll convey it to the city manager and their CFO as well, because there is an impact to the city on this reduction as well, 1.6 million that they need to be aware of and budget accordingly.
Correct.
Or if it's done in phases, they can phase it into their budget reduction.
If there was ever a time to do it on the city side, it's now, because we have a pretty healthy fund balance. But I guess we'll see.
Chair, I'd like to make a motion.
So we can go ahead and move forward and get a motion?
Yeah, I'm going to make a motion that we move forward with the recommendation as set forth by the PUB administration.
Second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. But this time we're going to go with number six, the discussion on the quarterly investment activity report for the period ending December 31st, 2021, pursuant to Chapter 2256.023 of the Public Funds Investment Act. Mike?
So good evening, Madam Chair, members of the board. I'll be presenting the investment report. This is for informational purposes only. No action is required. So in accordance with the Public Funds Investment Act, we are required to provide the board with a quarterly investment report. So I'll be presenting a summary of the investment report, and we'll start off here on page two. So at the end of the quarter, BPUB had funds invested in bank deposits and investment pools and money markets. To the tune of a market value of $220,086,304, with an average yield to maturity of 11%. Now, so we only had these two types of instruments, 30% of it in bank deposits and 70% in investment pools and money markets. A lot of the other investment instruments that we were looking at were all yielding very low yields as well. And so we stuck to this. Now, in March, it's going to be looking a little bit different. We are seeing yields in the treasury bills and agencies between 40 and 50 basis points. So by the end of March, we should see a different allocation. So we talked about the allocation, 30, 70%. It's all within the investment policy limits. Here, we also compare ourselves to the 91-day treasury bills and to the S&P rated governmental investment pool indexes, and what I can say here is that PUB has outperformed both indexes. So that concludes my report. Does the board have any questions? Thank you.
We move on to number seven. Number seven is a consideration and possible action on commercial paper funding adjustments to reimburse expenditures for electric, water, and wastewater capital improvement projects for the period of January 2022 through March 2022.
Right? Yes, good evening, Madam Chair, members of the board. So in accordance with the commercial paper program, staff requests approval to provide commercial paper funding. For this quarter ending in March, staff is requesting a reduction of $176,433. And the result of that is because the negative adjustment is due to the project that was completed under budget. And that's the Rio Grande substation in the amount of $700,315. And so some of the other increases here for electric, water, and wastewater represent the transformer for the Waterport substation and some new connections in paving and drainage project for the water wastewater site. So at this time, BPUB staff recommends approval of commercial paper funding adjustments for the electric, water, and wastewater capital improvements projects for the period of January 2022 through March 2022, for the quarterly total of a negative $176,433 and an overall total of $24,982,741.
Any questions from the board? So move. I need a second.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was good that we had a reduction.
Yes.
We're going to go to number eight. Consideration and possible action for bid award for the semi-annual supply of pole mount and pad mount transformers.
Good evening.
Hello, Diane.
Members of the board. My name is Diane Solitaire. PUB staff recommends approval of the bid award for the semi-annual supply of pole mount and pad mount transformers to the most responsive bidders as follows. KBS Electric Distributors of Austin, Texas, in the amount of $3,246,135, and WEG Transformers of Washington, Missouri, in the amount of $48,544 for a grand total amount not to exceed $3,294,679.
Do you have any questions from the board?
I have a quick question. Just explain to me, there's, you have over $3 million allocated for 445 units?
Yes, sir.
What units?
There are various sizes of transformers from 25, 35, 37, 50.
The other company, the WEG, the WEG, you only have 48,000 allocated for one unit?
Yes, well, that was the only one that they, we do it, we have an evaluation, the way we rate the, or evaluate the transformer based on the load losses, the no load and the load losses. And the low bidder was KBS for the majority of them.
So WEG is only going to sell us one item?
They'll only
sell us correct. And it's a very large transformer. That's what makes the difference. The rest of them are small quantities and small transformers. But in this case, I think it's a 1500 KVA.
And those 445 items, y'all request them as needed? Or do they come in all at
these,
once?
These, we're probably going to ask them all at once. Because at the way once. The lead time is right now, it's going to take a little more than a year to get them in. So,
have y'all done this before? Will you have this amount of transformers coming in into the warehouse?
We usually, before we would order them as needed, but with the way things are now, the manufacturers are not making, they're not taking orders anymore. So they've stopped orders until maybe the summer or 2023, because they need to catch up with all the backlog that they have.
There's literally a very serious supply chain issue for all utilities in procuring equipment like this and other types of equipment, PVC, poles, structure, steel, transformers, all kinds of stuff that's really impacting us.
You all discuss it and recommend that this amount of assets come in?
Yes, and many times as well, like when there's a hurricane or a storm coming, you know, we do load up on ordering minor material and other materials. So yes, this is something we discuss, and we set limits based on what the lead times are doing, and right now they've gone way out there compared to what we normally would have been seeing. Under normal conditions, we would have had enough, and you order, and then really quickly they show up. But today, that's not the case.
We also have approximately 6 or 7 new subdivisions that are coming out.
We need
to make sure that we have transformers to cover that, plus O&M.
Any questions? I need a motion.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to go to item number 9. Consideration and possible action to approve the professional engineering and surveying services contract with Half Associates, Inc. for the Brownsville North Regional Forest Main Project. Marie?
Madam Chair, members of the board. My name is Marie Leal, and I am the Director of Special Projects and Water, Wastewater Engineering Planning and Operations. On this board item, BPUB staff recommends approval of a professional engineering and surveying services contract with Half Associates, Inc. for the Brownsville North Regional Forest Main Project for a total amount not to exceed $1,642,850.
Questions from the board?
Need a motion?
So I'll make a motion that we move forward with a recommendation.
Second.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marie.
I'll stay here.
Okay. We're going to go with number 10. Consideration and possible approval of amendment number 1 for the professional consulting and technical services contract with ERO Architects for the Brownsville Public Utilities Board remodel of the existing administration building project.
Madam Chair, members of the board, recommended action. The BPB staff recommends approval of amendment number 1 in the amount of $235,780 for the professional consulting and technical services contract for the BPB remodel of the existing administration building project with ERO Architects for a grand total contract amount not to exceed $358,000.
Questions from
the board? I know, Maria, we talked about this at the one of the previous meetings. What's the next step? Y'all bringing these this firm into
The next step is for the contract for ERO to continue doing work on their design. They also bring on their team, for example, Half and Associates is the MEP, so they'll get them involved and bring up the plans, hopefully to a 50% completion at that time, since we already have a CMAR, a construction manager at risk contractor on board. They can value engineer the project and come to a point where they can, where the contractor, which is Noble Texas Builders, the CMAR, can come before the board and present his guaranteed maximum price, the price not to exceed amount. And that's at that time, the board, if they approve it, then we move on to construction.
All right.
So by the time we get there, of course, also is getting back with the city and making sure the city starts reviewing the plans for permitting.
You're still planning right now with this org, with this firm?
And correct.
You have half that other organization will be working with them, the other engineering organization. What do you call it, half?
I'm sorry?
What's the name of the other organization? H-A-F-F?
Half and Associates? Yes, Half and Associates will be performing the MEP. And of course, ERO handles the architecture and also the structural components of the project. And I think on this next phase, we are not going to have a need to do civil because the parking lot and the outside aspect of the project is already built. So if anything, it'll be some striping. Ambutech was the civil on site. At this time, we don't foresee using a civil on it.
Okay.
At this time, I need to entertain a motion to approve.
Make a motion that we move forward as recommended.
Second. All in favor say aye.
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 Mayor? Any opposed?
Aye. Sorry about that.
All right. Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Marie.
Thank you.
This time we're going to go to item number 11. Consideration and possible action to approve reimbursement to the City of Brownsville for utility improvements as part of the Avenida de la Plata, ELSA, Marvis, and San Pedro Paving and Drainage Improvements Project. Marie?
Madam Chair, members of the board, BPB staff recommends approval to reimburse the City of Brownsville for utility improvements as part of the Avenida de la Plata, ELSA, Marvis, and San Pedro Paving and Drainage Improvements Project for an amount not to exceed $1,283,710.
Can you tell us a little bit about this project? I thought it was a good project.
Yes. This is one of many projects when the city reconstructs a street, they always come to us to have the opportunity, if there's a need for us to, at that time, rehab our utilities, water and sewer, and at times if electrical needs to be moved out of the way, then that's the time that we team up with the city. And that way, when the road is being opened and reconstructed, our utilities, our underground utilities can be replaced. So this is one of those such projects. And what the city's been doing, I think this is one of their last ones that is part of a CIP projects that we've been doing these for the last couple of years. And so the city groups together also shorter streets, and thus the name of the various streets. They group them together to be able to get better prices on the reconstruction of them. And the city completely advertises, bids them out, and they either chose a design engineer to work on both aspects of it, or at times we choose our own design engineer, and we group together both the roadway construction and underneath utilities to put together a set of plans. So in this particular case, the city bid it out, and Peterson Construction was the low bidder. And we always try to make sure that it's also a beneficial bid for BPUB, that the utilities are still being bid competitively. And in this case, you can see that the utility cost at $1.2 million came in very low and competitively, which was good because our engineer's estimate for that was $1.6 million. So okay. We didn't have any issues with that. So Peterson Construction will be the one performing the roadway reconstruction as well as the underground utilities.
That's good.
And at the end of towards, and then the city will bill us. And this is, of course, a budgeted item. We have it in our budget, and then the city bills us, and we reimburse them. But the city handles paying the contract.
Yeah. Any questions from the board?
No.
No? Motion?
So moved.
First and second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mayor?
Since it involves a reimbursement to the city, I'm going to abstain.
Okay.
Thanks.
Do we have enough votes?
Yes.
Okay. Any opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Now we're going to go to item number 12, which is the consideration and possible action to approve the purchase of parts and reconditioning of the belt filter press at the Robindale Wastewater Treatment Plant. Jaime?
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the board. My name is Jaime Estrada. I am the Director of Operational Support Services. PUB staff is recommending approval of the purchase of replacement parts and reconditioning of the belt filter press for the Robindale Wastewater Treatment Plant from Alpha Lava Incorporated of Houston, Texas, for a total amount not to exceed $177,788.
Question from the board?
No. Second.
First and second. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Okay. Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Jaime. Next time we'll go to item number 13, the discussion and action on amendment of board policies and governance documents, including 1, annual oversight of specific activities of the board, 2, statement of policy for governance of the Brownsville Public Utilities Board, 3, management policy, and 4, specified of policy for travel by members of the Board of Directors of the Brownsville Public Utilities Board.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the board, these are standard policies the board's had, and they were in a different format. We changed our formatting process for all our policies, and these have kind of lagged behind in the format that we're operating on now. So there's some minor grammatical changes, but they're pretty much their exact same formula policies we've had. Unless there are any changes the board wanted to make to them, we recommend approval.
Any questions from the board? Make a motion?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. This time we're going to go to 14, which is discussion on request from Valley Municipal Utility District Number 2 for the wholesale sewer treatment services.
Madam Chair, members of the board, in your packet is a letter we received from VMUD Number 2, Valley Municipal Utility District Number 2, from Mr. Roger Nelson, the president of VMUD. And it basically says they're planning an expansion of wastewater at Rancho. And one of the things the state had asked them to do was to look at neighboring utilities and if there's an opportunity to either work together with those neighboring utilities or is there a way if a neighboring utility can take their wastewater without them needing to build additional or a new plant. They try to minimize the amount of new plants that are built, and this is a standard request by the state going forward, particularly on some of the smaller systems in the area. They try to minimize any kind of plant expansion. If they can regionalize those plants in any way, that's what they wanted to do. And so I've asked Marie to kind of just show you what we have out there and kind of what where we would be asked to take wastewater from. Picked up and taken to our system. And also what we would do on this is if they were to provide it, we would develop a wholesale rate for them just to take the wastewater. So there'd be no plan on their part. It would be a pipeline and a lift station to one of our facilities. We would monitor and measure that wastewater at a calculated fee. They would pay us that fee and it would eliminate a plant. So I'll ask Marie just to kind of in general go through what the plans are out there and what our options. We don't have a wholesale wastewater rate. We do for water, but not wastewater. We would need to have our rate consultant develop one. And we would present that to Rancho, and they would either accept it or go about with their plan. So Marie might just, we wanted to show you a visual so you know kind of what we got.
Yes, in front of you, you'll see a map, which is really our wastewater CCN, and the colors are going to change slightly from what the legend says. So I'm going to call this brownish color. This is the area that Valley Mud number two, VMUD number two. That's their limits of the area in purple. That's the city itself of Rancho Viejo, and they are not necessarily asking for us to assist them in taking their wastewater from the city itself. This area here, it's a light lilac color, is an area that we share, BPP shares it with Olmito. Of course, we have the expressway, we have SRWA here. Now, three important areas that that VMUD is looking for potential growth is this area here, the Resaca de la Palma, the area adjacent to what we call the Summer Hill. These are subdivisions off of 1732. And then on the by Military Highway, right across from Veterans High School, they have a Riverbend. Currently they have their plant that service, they have a very small plant out at the Riverbend, and then of course they have a 400,000 gallon capacity plant at Rancho Viejo. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it yet. They're approximately 65% capacity, and of course once they get to 75% capacity, they want to have a full plan and a backup plan of what they would do with their wastewater, and so that is why they're reaching out to us. And there's, of course, a lot of development happening in this area. They have one specific area of expansion next to Rancho Viejo with approximately 580 lots. And they estimate that this will be being developed in the next 2 to 3 years. So we basically have between a year to 2 years to work out something with VMUD. Now, possibilities would be that we could take their wastewater by force mains, of course, into our lift stations in the area of Villanueva, which is right where the cursor is, right off of Military Highway. And then, of course, it would go into our systems
along either all the way to 802 or West Alton Glore, and it'd be carried to the Robindale plant. And another possibility would be that they can also, or we can split it in not just one location, but into a second location, also in the Summerhill subdivision area, where, again, we have lift stations here. Right now, these lift stations go south along the expressway, but the plan is to one day take them and have them cross the expressway and go into the sports park, where we'll have that that North Regional Force Main, the board item that we just approved for Hafen Associates to design, and then it'll be carried easterly direction towards, again, towards the Robindale wastewater plant. So those are two options that we can work with VMUD on. The next steps would be that we work with them. We work, of course, with our attorneys. We currently don't have a wholesale rate for wastewater. We have them for water all the time. We are selling to El Jardin. We also sell right on this area to Military Highway Water Supply, but we don't have a rate for wastewater. So the next steps would be to work out a wholesale wastewater rate, and then, of course, decide on connection points, decide on specifications and regulations, pretreatment that we would want them to abide by before we take on their wastewater. So there's some work to do, but we just wanted the board to have a visual of what we're talking about.
We have plenty of capacity. That's not an issue. It's just more working with our neighbor. They seem receptive. Marie talked to them about of us doing a contract together, so that's positive. So we can do some minimal work on our side to get to a cost and then go from there and bring it back to the board.
Okay. Does this generate funds for PV?
Yes. Yeah, we're in the wastewater business, so it would avoid a plant, and they would, you know, pay us a fee for that, and we'd recover our costs plus some, and it's a win-win. It's done right.
And I'm sure it's going to be more expensive than water, wholesale water, I think. So.
So it's really just discussion and to go ahead with it, to develop a cost and then bring it back to the board. We would, the board would approve the wholesale cost, and we would submit that to Rancho. We probably have that in a month.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions? Or no? Okay. At this time, we're going to move over to our closed meetings. Under our closed meetings, we have item number one, which is a meeting with the board's legal counsel for advice about contemplated and pending court and administrative litigation and on matters in which the duty of the attorney under the Texas Disciplinary Rules of Professional Conduct conflicts with Chapter 551. Section 551.071, including, among other matters, and status of required financial disclosure reports. Item number two is a report by the general manager and CEO on the status of appointment of a chief operating officer and a discussion thereon. If I can get a motion to recess to closed session.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Yes. Motion carries.
Is it going to be the same link? Because I didn't get any other links other than this one.
It's the same one.
Okay. Thank you.
Different link.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Stay on.
Okay, Mayor. Hello.
Good evening. I'm Carmela Petritis, class of 37.
Kelsey Greer, class 37.
Glenn Havlin, class 37.
Hi.
Jorge Camorlinga, class 37.
Hi.
Hi. Andrea Shane, class 37.
Hi, how are you?
Welcome, but you know what? Class 18 was the best.
Uh-oh. 37.
Class 18, and we just Miss Marie Leal, who is presenting right now, she's part of that class 18. But good luck to you guys. You're all doing good.
Thank you. Good luck. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for being here.
It's John Davidson. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you.
Are we ready?
Yes.
Okay.
We're going to go ahead and continue with item number 15, which is consideration and possible action on items discussed on closed meeting. Oh, there was nothing to discuss. There's no action on the closed meeting. So we're going to go to item number 16. Is there any discussion and or request for future agenda items from the board members? None?
No, I like this the format. This turned out really good.
So at this time, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Any opposed? Motion carries. Meeting has been adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Madam Chair.